We'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we record this podcast, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.
Content warning. These conversations could contain strong descriptions of sexual violence, self-harm, and other adult concepts, and we advise it may be upsetting for some listeners. On this episode of the Resource Podcast, we talk to CEO and founder of Reimagine HR, Trina Sunday. We have a discussion talking about creating cultures within a workplace and how important it is to have self-awareness when it comes to being an employee, being executive level and being a part of the crew or employees out on site or within the company. We discuss in depth about what a toxic culture can look like and the things that we can do to change those toxic cultures. I loved how she coined the phrase, a brilliant jerk, discussing those people that we have all seen within a company that is bringing in the funds, hitting their KPIs, but might be a little bit of a jerk, and what it will take as a leader to have the courage to get rid of those brilliant jerks in your pursuit of creating an ideal culture within your company and your business. We discuss the importance of each individual's responsibility when it comes to creating good culture, and what changes that you can make when it comes to making those changes, seeing things that need to change, and having the courage to make those changes. I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as I do. I really enjoyed Trina's vulnerability, honesty, and openness, and her willingness to make a change within HR, for HR, and for the goodness of society and culture within a workplace. Welcome to the Resource Podcast, Trina. It's such a pleasure to finally have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's we've been having chats for a while, going back and forth, but it's nice that we've finally found some time to actually have this conversation on the podcast so everybody else can hear it. And I've asked you to come on today because what you do is really unique in the space of HR. So would you like to explain to the listeners what it is that you do and a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, sure. So my company, Reimagine HR, we work with HR teams in terms of trying to level up what we bring to the people practices and organisations. So it's trying to bring a more innovative approach, being more people-centric in terms of what we're driving, and then also on the flip side of supporting HR teams, supporting organisations to be more savvy around their approach to culture change, and actually engaging in anything to do with culture so that we can have more positive environments.
Yeah, I love that. And I think the discussion we were having previously was that you work with HR to help their culture be good, because it was something that when you mentioned it and Peter introduced me to you, it was something that I was like, yeah, obviously, you've got to make sure that the culture is good because it bleeds down from, executive level, HR level. So if you don't have a great culture within HR, how can you instill that culture, within the company unless it's going well within HR? So I love what you do. And how did you get into that? What was it that's kind of sparked your interest in HR in the first place and then going, taking the path that you took for this?
I think, let's be honest, there's lots of people that I know that work in HR that never grew up as little people thinking that they were going to work in HR.
True.
Most of us have stumbled our way in there. And for me, I was marketing and PR before moving into the HR space, but fast track 20 years and here I am. For me, things changed really badly when I found myself in a really toxic workplace. So I was one of those people that came into an organisation kind of at the top of my game, headhunted to go into that organisation, found myself working with some leaders who were not as authentic as they might have presented themselves to be, and they were wanting me to be leading and driving culture change in that organisation. And, you know, what you have and what you fast track when you find yourself in an organisation that's really toxic and a culture that's toxic and relationships that might be toxic is that you start to doubt yourself. And so what happens is I started to doubt my competence, my ability to make a difference and drive what I knew to be great people practices. I knew that I was great at building relationships, building partnerships, being really impactful. And I started to doubt that because the environment I found myself in didn't match up. It didn't want me to be shining in that space. Mm-hmm. And so you can be damaged in it, right? Like most toxic relationships, it can leave a mark. And so I left that organisation, and I then made some traumatic and, you know, decisions later on to then move to Cambodia and do a whole range of other things.
Dramatic.
Okay. Dramatic coming out of the traumatic. And it flipped life on its head, right? And what I got was re-excited about the impact that you can have when you are in the sweet spot as a HR person in the middle of working with phenomenal people that want to make a difference and to build the most positive organisation that they can. It's phenomenal. And I didn't want anyone to experience what I'd experienced in that toxic workplace, and I want everyone in HR to experience what I've experienced since, which is working in organisations where you can absolutely make a difference and you see the impact that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most rewarding thing ever.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you're speaking about toxic workplaces. So I'm sure listeners can definitely resonate with having been in some toxic workplaces before. But what would you say is the difference between a toxic workplace and a great workplace to live? Like what are things that are happening? What are things to kind of look out for? And what are things that you can hope for change when it comes to looking for a better workplace to be in?
I think a lot of the time people liken poor cultures or toxic relationships as being ones that show up as being aggressive. And I think that, you know, like sometimes we talk about behaviour in the workplace and people talk about whether there's been shouting or aggression or some level of violence, or, you know, that that's the level that we talk about of acceptable behaviour in a workplace. But more so it's the unspoken stuff, right? It's the exclusion. It's the, you know, the selective few. It used to be the boys' club, but I know lots of women in that club. And, you know, I think that it's one of those things where you've got people that will be tearing you down, leaving you out of really important conversations, not giving you the opportunity to step into the space, disempowering you in the role, micromanaging, gaslighting, like just leaving you in a kind of an information vortex. And so you can't position yourself for the opportunities that the other people have got an inside run on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that they're all kind of symptoms. And then you kind of can see, you know, what my dear colleague Michelle Redfern, when we had an event recently on toxic cultures, and she was talking about the brilliant jerk. And it's like everyone in a room that resonates with, and it's those people in an organisation that you see them behaving so badly, yet you know that they're untouchable because they're bringing in the most sales, or they've been in that resource company for decades, and, you know, they've got part like relationships that are just unbreakable. And people know that they're untouchable.
And they kind of walk around knowing that they're untouchable as well, don't they?
Yeah, and so you've got a power imbalance, and then you've got, you know, people talk about culture change and talk about HR needing to change processes or procedures or practices. The most visible and powerful symptoms of a culture that's changing will be leadership making the bold decision to get rid of a brilliant jerk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
It changes everything.
Mm.
Because if you're going to be coming out as a leadership group and saying, you know, we need to be more respectful in the workplace and we really want to bring our values to life and be living our values, and we need to, if you're not showing up and you've got a brilliant jerk at the table that's tolerated to treat people badly and there's no consequence for it, everything else is lip service, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things where in the work that I do both with HR teams to empower them to be more impactful on culture change, but then also with leadership and executive teams to be more aware about culture, you try and bring those things in alignment. Because it surprises me how many leadership groups I work with who have never had a conscious learning about culture. We've got many really senior leaders and executives who have not had much learning and development around culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what actually drives a culture. And we know that leaders drive culture, but cultures also drive leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this reciprocal circle, and together it drives performance, right? So all organisations want great performance, sales, profit, revenue, especially for not-for-profits. You know, we want to make sure we've got funds coming in. We need leadership to drive a positive workplace culture, and the culture will also influence leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a great leader coming into a toxic organisation. It'll be a matter of, does that leader adapt to survive there? and become more like the toxic organisation.
And then are they a leader?
Because it's, you know, like you either survive, you either fit in with the culture, or if you want to thrive, so a lot of the time people will talk about promotion with that, then you'll see what it takes. You watch and observe the unwritten things that happen in an organisation
mm-hmm.
to know what it means to survive and thrive there.
Can you be a good person, you know, like a good leader coming in and still thrive with promotions and stuff into a toxic workplace, do you think? Is there a possibility to change from what you've seen?
Oh, it's such a great question because my gut just went, and you know me, I'm a straight shooter, my gut just went, no.
Hell no, Becky.
Hell no, but let's unpack it because I'm one of those people too, right?
We want
right?
hope, yes.
So it depends how strong you are, but this is where resilience comes in. But it's knowing, it's actually knowing yourself is the most critical thing, right? It's mm-hmm. knowing what values you're not going to compromise. And at the end of the day, that's what it takes people to be able to lay straight in bed at night and be able to show up knowing they've done a great job. I know that I've run lots of sessions where I have people walk out and every single person thinks their organisation's toxic. So we know there are symptoms of toxicity everywhere. The same as what we have health-wise in our bodies, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, toxins can be harmful if they're left to just, you know. So it's how do you create the right kind of healthy environment for those to be broken down, you know, managed so that it doesn't have the impact on the health of the organisation and then the health of the people.
Mm-hmm. Because it does affect your health 100%.
Oh, my gosh. It's just underestimated. And we know that there's so much more visibility that we bring to mental health conversations, which is phenomenal. But we've still got this legacy of, you know, emotion is weakness and vulnerability is, you know, not leaders can't be shown to be vulnerable because then they can't get respect and authority. Authority comes from, you know, what you might build in terms of people wanting to follow you. You'll get a lot more loyalty, engagement and work performance and productivity out of people that want to follow you, not people that you're telling to follow you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, there's a lot of work that people can do in that space to try and make sure that they are aware about what impact it's going to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you stay in it too long, and I don't bring people into all of my Reimagine HR programs trying to get them to quit their organisations and jobs, just in case there's any execs listening. But
just putting it out there.
Saying that, what happens is a lot of people have breakthroughs, right? They come into our programs and realise that where they are is not where they want to be. And they want to be – so it's either then a decision of do you think you can influence the environment? Do you think you can make the change for it to be as rewarding as you want it to be? Or that environment might not be right for you. And for you to truly thrive, you need to be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really personal journey. That's a personal decision. But I love being able to bring kind of insight to people around things that they can be thinking about.
Because mm-hmm.
it's about being informed. Life's too short to be working in a terrible job where you hate going to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants that. And I don't want that for people, which is why I'm so passionate.
To work. Like that's what the toxic workplaces end up being because people aren't happy where they are or, you know, like you said, they weren't able to influence an environment mm. when it comes to their culture and their values. So it ends up being about making sure you've got the right people for the job, and it's going to take a bit of reshuffling and it's going to take a lot of self-awareness from each person mm-hmm. to know that maybe they're not happy in that position or maybe they could be in a better position to help the company.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love that you said that. Mm-hmm. Self-awareness is key in life in general but definitely in the roles that you're in when it comes to workplace.
Yeah, and then I think it's for leaders to have awareness around their role in that, right? Like, so you can be in a toxic culture or a toxic workplace, but if you have a really inspiring leader that is authentically showing up and saying, I don't want it to be this way, I want us to be better, and even if that's focused at a team level, right, you can protect your team and build a phenomenal culture within your team. So I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out if you just kind of say, well, the whole organisation, like not firing. It's not the F word I was going for, but it's like, you know, but if the whole organisation is not, it's like you either give it up or you create and shift the culture where you do have influence. And most of the time that's your own team. How do you, you know, how do you interact with your own people? How do you show up every day in your own environment? How do you show up when you're walking down the street and you walk past people that need help? and you keep walking, because, you know, like, it's in all facets of life. So I think that, you know, it's about not just giving up because the environment around us might not be what we want it to be.
Mm-hmm. I love that. When you were speaking just then, speaking about a leader and how it affects your health, I remember an experience that I've had in a workplace where it was definitely toxic for me in this workplace, and then obviously because other people were watching it be toxic for me, it became a toxic workplace. I remember, you know, thinking, oh, if only I had some support, if only I had this, if only they had HR practices in place, I would come to work and cry, you know, like cry at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I was definitely getting gaslit. I was getting like isolated, even though when I first started that role, I was getting kind of groomed in that role of, you know, I was treated very special by the manager, and it became, you know, we ended up in a relationship, like a secret relationship, mm-hmm. his idea. And what played out after that and it becoming a toxic workplace, me blaming myself because I thought I'd put myself in that position, me blaming myself because I'd made that decision that we ended up doing that, and then realizing after that I was like, hey, no, that's not acceptable. No matter who you are, what you're doing, especially if you're a leader, you need to make better decisions and simply be a good human being. And this person wasn't being a great human being. And it wasn't until I kind of had that realization that I was like, hey, that's not acceptable. I don't know what changed, but I felt empowered one day and ended up putting in a complaint, and I was made redundant, actually. But what would you say when it comes to you've spoken about a toxic workplace? What's some advice if you're a leader or if you're somebody in a workplace that you can be that an influential leader and an inspiring leader? What's some advice that you give when you're doing your workshops or when you're speaking to companies, when you're speaking to leaders? How can you show up as inspiring? What decisions can you make? And what does it look like each day when it comes to your decision-making as a leader?
Pretty big podcast topic in its own right. I think that for me, it's around looking at being constructive every day. So what does that look like? Constructive is kind of turning up and, you know, setting goals for your team that are realistic. They're stretch targets and things, but they're realistic. They're going to motivate people, challenge people. But you're not setting them up for failure, and to have them run through the mill only to just never be able to achieve it, and therein start to question competence sometimes. That you want leaders to be turning up with a confidence around the impact that they're having and the difference that they're having, and being able to articulate that. So being able to articulate, you know, we get all caught up in, you know, HR speak and corporate speak around values and mission and vision and purpose, and it all blurs together. It's like a leader that inspires is someone that can show up every day, tell people why they're there and how their contribution fits in.
Mm-hmm.
It's for leaders to be able to connect the dots for people. It's leaders that have the visibility over an entire organisation to show how our puzzle pieces fit together. And leaders can show up and do that. And then it's about helping people grow. So it's this moving away from criticizing and critiquing for the sake of exposing people for their mistakes, and actually really truly wanting to see people grow. And if leaders have a mindset of wanting growth in others, and if leaders are, and some people call it servant leadership, you know, from a terminology perspective, but it's really around serving others as a mindset across all of this, will mean that people are putting others before themselves, and self-interest kind of gets parked more at the door. And so if you're driving growth in other people, and it's about their learning, their development, if you're not helping people underneath you get promotions and step up and around you, you're probably not doing your best as a leader to try and help that. And the more you help people grow, the more loyalty you have from them, the more that they will give you, because you've given so much to them. So there's a reciprocal nature to that. But it's then also just creating an environment that's friendly. And people say, well, that's all the warm, fuzzy HR stuff, you know, where it's just like, oh, you know, we can't all be smiling. It's like, yeah, we can.
Just don't be a dick. Like, you know, just don't be a douchebag.
Or just own it. Like, it's the difference between, though, you know, being affiliative and being friendly and cooperating with people, because you know that that's in the interest of actually achieving something and doing something great. Not wanting to interact with you because I need your approval and for you to be my friend, that would be more of a toxic behaviour. Because if I need your approval, then I'm going to do whatever it takes to get your approval, even if it's not the right thing for the environment and for the team. And so I think it's about creating the right space for people to be able to do that and know what the boundaries are. But I think at the same time, it's doing whatever you can as a leader to understand culture and to understand all the levers that go with it, because it's not – culture's a long game. It's a long game. It's like me with fitness and health, and I talk about if I take my eye off the prize with that, I go backwards really quickly.
Mm.
Culture's the same. It's like it has to be – there needs to kind of be – I don't mean a discipline that it's like – because everyone thinks, oh, it's a long game, so it's really hard work. It's too much effort. I can't be bothered. But the reward if you have an amazing, positive culture and work environment, it's so phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
People love coming to work. They love doing what they do. They produce great results. You have innovation in your organisation. Cool things happen. And people are enjoying the camaraderie of doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome space to be. And so it's kind of, I get a bit caught up in like, that's why I'm so passionate around being able to help HR impact that space, but also leaders at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And going back to you mentioned talking about like being a boys' club, and obviously there's women in that now. I've had this discussion with my sister speaking about how as women I've definitely felt it before in different work environments or even just in society in general that we may feel like there can only be one strong female in the room, and if that female isn't you, then you need to do anything you possibly can to either tear that person down or speak about that person or, like sabotage anything that they're working on. What do you feel about that, and do you want to expand on that, and if you've ever encountered that yourself or encountered it in workplaces that you've helped?
It's interesting because I don't know if it's the one female in the, I think it's the one dominant person. I think it's blurring away from, you know, we used to talk about the alpha male. But I feel like, you know, this alpha female notion also becomes a part of, if you take the gender out of it, it's just, it's people generally that are jostling for position most of the time because they're coming from a place of insecurity.
Mm, and lack.
So they're coming from that place of needing to feel some kind of insecurity or fear for themselves. And so the only way of doing that may be, well, I don't have the goods to show up here, so I need to tear down anyone else in the room that's actually got the goods so that I don't look bad. Or I don't, you know, that they're more avoidant. But a lot of the time it's that more defensive kind of behaviours is what we associate with the alpha type tendency. I just feel like if you focus on being constructive, that just falls away naturally. And so rather than consciously trying to address kind of the negative toxic behaviours, if you're encouraging the positive, then the negative stuff will shrink by default.
Mm-hmm.
My personal experience is that, you know, like I've come through as well, having come through your 20s, 30s, now into my 40s, right, where it's like, well, I've never had any gender issue in a workplace. You know, I've never really had the female thing. I've just worked hard to get where I am, right? Now I'm in my 40s, I'm like, well, there's privilege hitting you in the face. You know, like there's learning that we all have a responsibility to have and a personal insight where we step back and go, the fact that I said that a decade or two ago is really showing up now on reflection of the fact that I said those things because I was in a position of privilege to not have had to fight through some of the adversity of some of my colleagues. So it's like you've got to step into the discomfort to grow, right? And so that's part of it for me. And then I've always had male colleagues as my biggest kind of supporters in workplaces, and what I'd describe as bitchy women as my biggest detractors. I feel like though now that I'm, you know, a specialist in organisational development and do so much work in culture change and behaviour change generally, I just look at it, the fact that those people just threatened, there's something in there that was just threatening, and that's their thing, right? But when you're in it sometimes and you're thinking, what have I done wrong? Like, what's, you know, what's the thing that I've brought to the table that's kind of got this person treating me this way? Most of the time it's got nothing to do with you. It's all their shit, to be honest. And you can try and sometimes give constructive feedback to people because it might be a blind spot for them. And I've seen people shift. I've seen people who have had leadership profiling done and they've gone through culture change kind of leadership development programs and they've got some 360 feedback and they're like, huh, didn't know I was showing up like that. You know, and I've seen people change because they just weren't aware.
And people want to be better, don't they? They want to show up.
Most people do. And the thing that we know is, like, you know, if people are coming from that defensive space and that place of insecurity, it doesn't feel great for them either. You know, it doesn't feel great for them to be in that energy space all the time. The more constructive we are and the more constructive the cultures in our workplaces, the easier life feels. And we all want that, right? We don't want to feel like we're trudging through mud every day just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fun. That's not fun.
That's not living.
No.
No.
No, ma'am.
And what's your – no, it ain't. No, it ain't.
No, it ain't.
No, thank you. I don't want that for my life. And speaking of, I used to play the no thank you game where when I realised I've done a lot of self-development and I consider myself pretty self-aware and being in the workplace, being in FIFO, understanding that other people's shit was not my own and that, you know, somebody would have an attack on you or, you know, show up in a way that you're like, that's nothing to do with me, and I'd play the no thank you game.
Love
so
it.
Certainly not out loud, but in my head I'd be like,
it. You've said it. You doing it out loud.
Yeah, no thanks.
Someone goes off and you're like, no thank you.
Yeah, well, I mean, away. I've definitely been in situations before and I've told people about what I do and I've heard that they've said it out loud, but you obviously don't want to be, you know, like anger the ant's nest, but it's in your head, no thank you, that's not mine.
Yeah, and not
like
taking kind that of on
giving
today.
That back. No, that's not my shit, that's your shit.
Yeah.
I think that's really good advice because as well, we're all human and people have so much shit going on outside of the workplace and you spend a lot of time with the people that you work with.
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of show up as an exceptional human being every day, but as long as we're all on the pursuit of that, then, you know, we can't ask for much more, I suppose. So speaking about companies and the companies that you're working with, what are the most common when it comes to like a toxic workplace and when talking about a really great workplace, what are some of the most common things that you find that you have to change, and then what are some of the consistent themes of a great workplace?
So I think a lot of the time the things to change is the fact that at a leadership level we talk about the wrong things a lot of the time. And from a HR perspective, because that's the space I lean into a lot as well, right, there's, you know, exec teams will often say that HR team's not commercial enough, not business savvy enough. And a lot of the time there might not be a HR seat at the business decision-making table because they don't see the impact of that on bottom line. So I feel like in, you know, for us to make sure that culture's at the forefront, then HR need to be able to draw in kind of the impact of poor culture on productivity, engagement and outcomes, both at an individual level, a team level and an organisational level. But I think that, you know, when it comes down to doing things great, to be honest, most of the time it comes down to leadership being the most critical element. Leadership's where great cultures fall over most of the time in my observation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, and I know that a lot of my HR colleagues will get slammed for, especially now because we've shifted our terminology from HR to people and culture. It's like we've then handed culture over to HR. It doesn't work like that. HR sits at the top. Culture sits at the top. Like it touches everybody and everybody touches culture. But it comes from leadership. You want your people and culture experts and specialists to understand culture at a level that's different and to be able to understand how to drive change and support and enable learning, growth, you know, catalyst for doing things better. But at the end of the day, that HR aren't making the people decisions or the operational decisions that are kind of creating the culture that's kind of showing up. And so there's lots of different levers for culture change where it is about uniting people over the purpose. So in great organisations, that's done really strongly. Like everyone's on board with what the vision is of the organisation and why they're doing what they do. And then the other element is around the structure. And when I say structure, I don't mean org charts, but I'm talking about where do the decisions get made? Toxic cultures have decisions being made right at the top. How many people have to sign off your form to go on leave? How many people have to sign off for you to get your $30 reimbursement for your taxi fare to go to that meeting? Like, it's, there's a degree of ridiculousness that exists in lots of organisations around not trusting people. And trust is at the core of toxic cultures, or a lack of trust is at the core of toxic cultures. So because of the behaviours and what's showing up, there's a lack of trust. Where there's a lack of trust, there's a lack of relationships, people not having their back, you know, self-protection. It's that fear insecurity space when there's no trust.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that play out a lot in COVID, especially where we had, you know, great organisations with great cultures, empowered their people, don't care how you do it, survive in your work from home, hybrid, whatever it is you need to do, but get the job done and let us know what you need. Toxic cultures were going more to the micromanagement. If I can't see you're not working, you need to get back to the office now. You know, I'm aware of organisations that are taking, you know, screen captures to see if people are online working. You know, there's keystroke stuff built into software. It's scary stuff. Like, if the culture of your organisation is so bad that you can't trust your people to do that, then you've got bigger issues. And so a lot of the time we'll put this processy type band-aid in there. It won't change anything. It'll just make your people even more resentful, the culture even more toxic, because you're disempowering people even more. The more we disempower, the more people will disengage. The more disengaged, the less productive people are. So, you know, great organisations kind of are aware of that. They're looking at where decision-making happens and having it happen at the lowest level possible that's acceptable for the risk. It's making sure that information gets to the people that need to have it, because knowledge is power, right? And it gets used against people if a culture is toxic, or withheld from people, which can then have people and colleagues show up as incompetent because they didn't have all the information they needed for the pitch. They didn't have all the information they needed to lead their team on site in terms of something that was happening with a fit out. So, you know, there's lots in that. And then obviously there's all of the process and technology type things around how we design our processes. And is that designed to set people up for success? Are they designed to empower people, designed to help them grow? Or is it just about us criticising people, scrutinising people and making them feel terrible because they can't be trusted to show up every day? But the core part is then around leadership, and it's the skills and the qualities of our communication, how we bring our teams together, how we cooperate. And leaders, the fabric that holds all of that together, right? And so HR can understand culture at a level to understand how to educate on that and how to influence on that. But if there's not buy-in from leadership, it'll all be a waste of time.
And speaking, like you spoke about trust a lot, and I think workplaces, you have relationships. The workplace and the company is like a relationship. So if you don't have trust in yourself, you don't have that abundance mindset within yourself, then that's going to reflect on your workplace. It's going to reflect on your leadership skills. It's going to reflect on how you show up as an employee. So speaking, you know, like talking about how important trust is and trusting your employees. When it comes to, say you've got a really toxic culture and you become aware, you know, you've been blissfully unaware, you've been with companies like mining or large companies that have just been doing the do, they're so busy getting things done, everything's bigger than Ben Hur, but then they become aware that their culture is quite not great, it's toxic. What's like an overhaul that you can have at the beginning? What's something that you can do to dramatically change culture? That is something that obviously things take time, and we were talking about that, and it's the long game. But what's your advice to a company that was blissfully unaware that their culture was bad, or say somebody's coming into the workplace as a new employee or a new leader? What's the shifts or the changes that can happen to shake up culture, or maybe a survey, you know, like surveys or workshops or, you know, something like that?
My first response to that is to stop doing the happiness indices to try and convince yourself that everything's okay. It's controversial in the HR space when I come out publicly and say employee engagement surveys are a waste of time. But my entire career, I've seen organisations with employee engagement scores that might be 85, 90 plus, and then we might have a KPI for the board that says we're going to get our employee engagement to 96. I can guarantee you if your employee engagement goes from 92 to 96, nothing's going to change. I can guarantee if you actually talk to your people, they're not feeling a 96. You've just constructed a really great survey.
To get the answers you want.
That gets a climate measure. And so there's a big difference between climate and culture. And a lot of organisations and a lot of leaders that I work with have not appreciated the difference. So climate being that's what we see, right? So sometimes it might be how people feel, and that's where employee engagement can show up some of how people feel about different things. But it's what we see. We put short-term fixes in place then. It might address some climate. It's not about putting pool tables in the mess hall. It's not about, do you know what I mean? Those perks are not things that are going to actually address full engagement. Engagement being that someone wants to go above and beyond.
I've seen a meme where it's like they do it like a client survey or like an engagement survey, and it's like, oh, we really want to help you change and create a nice environment, so we're going to give you guys yoga classes. And then the staff are like, oh, we were talking about maybe a raise or something, you know, like less working hours or,
you know, something that actually matters to me.
Yeah.
But I think so those are the things that kind of you know, when we talk about like if suddenly we've got this revelation, we've got a toxic culture, there should be no suddenly if leadership's engaged and got their eye on the prize and look at culture as closely as they do profit margins. Because culture's the unwritten stuff. It's the more invisible things. It's the way we do things around here, and it's observed. So people observe it. They watch it, they see what it takes, and then they mirror those behaviours. And so people will mirror what they can see, again, back to the survive and thrive. But I think we need to be actually wanting to engage with our people and get information from them that's actually helpful for us to shift the culture. And it's not a top-down thing. This traditional historical approach to change management, which we've applied historically the same principles of change management to culture change. Change management's a qualification people can go and get, right? It's got pretty strong steps that you follow, methodology in terms of driving change. A lot of the time historically it's been around a product implementation, a technological, you know, it's different. People are different. You can't, and so it's more of a change movement we need to look for. It's trying to look at where we've got men. And it's similar to what you're doing with, you know, the work that you do, right? It's around you're not going out to all of the CEOs of each organisation and trying to convince them to do something different. It's creating a movement of people that are passionate around wanting there to be safe workplaces, around wanting everyone to have an equitable shot, around expecting that you can turn up and get treated well in the environment because everyone's turning up for the same reason. And I think that, you know, that's where we need to focus the effort. But at the end of the day, if you want to be overhauling and starting to shift things straight away, it's being serious about it and making it a mandate that is constantly looked at, not something that comes up because of a parliamentary inquiry or a royal commission or a coronial inquest. And a lot of the time that's where I've seen, you know, culture type work comes up because someone found out some bad stuff.
Mm.
And we're doing it in response to that.
It's reactive instead of preemptive or preventative.
Where a phenomenal space to be would be all leaders coming through with really great skills and awareness to be able to go, hey, this doesn't feel right. I'm not sure what's going on. Like, let me bring that to exec because that needs to be prioritised over the conversation we're going to have about implementing some policy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about then having the confidence. But that's where I feel like the leadership development space needs a big injection of new ideas,
mm-hmm.
a bit of reimagining mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah, I see. We can talk about what they might be able to do. So when it comes to, with just what you're speaking about, wrapping that up, talking about each person's individual impact, and I think people don't understand, and having this discussion, people don't quite understand the impact that they can have, even if they're not in that workplace. So friends and family, how you show up as a, you know, a wife, a husband, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a sister, a brother. So having that self-reflection, that self-awareness of showing up as a great person and understanding that you have a humongous impact on culture in society and culture within the workplace. Mm. I think understanding that is what definitely I'm trying to do, and yourself is giving people and empowering people to take on the responsibility of that culture is their own. Culture yep. is their own responsibility, and being self-aware enough that, you know, they have the power to do that. So when it comes to being an employee, I think the biggest conversation that's had, like in FIFO definitely, and being an employee my whole life, I've never been an executive, never been a CEO, it's only now having these discussions, but there's quite often a massive disconnect between executive level conversation and executive level education and employee and, you know, crew out on site, for example, in FIFO. What's your advice when it comes to making sure that there's changes and implementations that executives want to make is translated to the crew on site or the people that are actually representing them in a company? What would you say is really important in building a bridge over that disconnect?
Execs not sitting in a room and deciding what needs to be done. That's a good place to start.
Asking your people.
So, you know, and we talk about voice of the people, and sometimes people can get, like, I have people roll eyes sometimes when we talk about that. It's like, you've got to look at it from the right perspective though. If you want to change to land for the right reasons, why would you not gather all of the intel that's going to help you make sure that whatever shift you're going to make is going to have the impact that you want it to have? And execs are the furthest from where the real work happens as you can get, right? And then what we have in the middle is this sandwich of middle management or supervisors, team leaders, who might get filtered information from the top. They get all the complaints and grievances coming from underneath, and they're in the middle, ill-equipped or ill-informed around what to do with it all, right? And it can be so overwhelming. Like, you've got good people, great people, who operationally have worked their way up in an organization, often had little support for that leadership transition. So we do onboarding, right, when we bring people new into an organisation. I'm all about, where's the intraboarding? Like, where's the internal onboarding that happens when people transition into more senior roles? We kind of just throw them in. So what do? They mirror what they've seen of the leaders that were in there before them. So if you want to be
If
they've seen it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time you might see the what not to do and you're like, well, I don't want to be that kind of leader, and that can be good insight. But if you don't have that benchmark, then you might go, oh, well, that's how it has to be done, and you just see these, like, it's like generational behaviours that just flow from one, you know, one family to the next or one team to the next in an organisational context.
I think that's what's happened in FIFO. I think talking about it being a culture that's just been left to its own devices, and speaking about what we did at the beginning where things just haven't been questioned, and people will do anything to fit in or avoid confrontation, or let's be honest, people just want to go to work and do their job. They don't want to have to deal with confrontation. They don't want to have to deal with anything that stops them from being able to do their job well. We all want to do a good job. We all want to be the best at it. We want to be, you know, sometimes better than other people because that shows that you're doing a great job. So it's really interesting, I think, speaking about that conversation, like within FIFO, and how you will do anything to bloody fit in. And the difference as well of who's working in a company at executive level and who are the crew on site who are willing to get hot, sweaty, dirty, you know, like be away from their family and friends, go through, you know, being mentally challenged every single day by being away, and having that understanding of each other and working together and not being bitter as a crew and feeling like you don't fucking understand what I'm going through, but also having that compassion and empathy from an executive level of being like, I appreciate that you're doing the work that you're doing. I've got to do what I'm doing. I need that compassion and empathy to come back as well, because without without my position, you can't do yours, and without yours, you can't do, you know, you can't do yours. So,
and if you play that out on site, right, the guys and girls on the ground, they and them included, so anybody working, operating on the ground will be like, I don't care what you need necessarily up in your ivory tower, like I'm out here caning myself to make you lots of money, right? Like I hear that a lot. Then I hear on the exec side, well, they're only going off or going FIFO because they want the money. They're driven by the money. So it's giving them the money. That's all that's important, right? So there's this erroneous assumptions just being made and gross generalizations all over the shop without any genuine vested interest in terms of trying to figure out what is motivating you to do it.
And how different the motivation from an executive level to a crew level is.
And even at a peer level.
Yeah.
Like, you and I are different. Like, what might be motivating you to go there will be different to me. Or even if you were driven by the remuneration, the reason for wanting it would be different. If you had some idea about that, the things that you can do to support people, and it's like I was having some conversations with partners of mine, Michelle Dorr, she's a psychologist with Braveheart Wellbeing, and she does a lot of work in the FIFO space. And she's been FIFO, she's lived it, she understands the family complexities of FIFO. And then she's on the flip side of now working in the community about it. And it's, you know, there's not enough support in there for people to understand the consequence of being isolated. Or, you know, there's not enough preparation that goes into helping people understand what a FIFO experience might look like, how it might play out, things to look for in terms of the impact that it can be having on self and family. Because we all bring our work home, right? Like, especially if you're in a toxic organisation, like how many partners have we all had that, you know, we've gone home or been on the receiving end of hearing non-stop about their bloody terrible work environment. And it's like you just desperately want them to change it if you think that they're not in a place to influence it, because it's having an impact on them. So I think it's about understanding kind of where people are coming from, and that doesn't come from a survey. Never has, never will. And I know that I then get hit with the, well, we don't have the resources to be going out and having chats to people all the time. It's like, it's stopping looking at this as more work. You know, from a culture perspective, it's not adding culture on as this other massive thing that we, that leaders need to do on top of their day job or that every, it's changing how we do the work. You know, like if you're having a meeting with the team, it's changing how you structure that. How do you focus on what's important first, which might have, you know, reference to where your people are at. Like, how do you shift the conversation so you get the balance of both what we're achieving organisationally or what the team's achieving versus what the team needs. And if you go in first with the, hey, go, hey, you're doing a great job, what do you need, how can I make it better, but then you actually do something with what is suggested and you actually listen, because that's another thing that drives people crazy with employee engagement surveys. They give feedback over and over and over again and nothing changes. So you just have a lack of engagement even in the process. So until a leader comes through and cuts through and terminates the brilliant jerk, regardless of what they're bringing into the company, or makes bold moves around, you know, promoting someone up who doesn't have the street cred that otherwise might have been anticipated, but they're going to support them because they know that they're the best person for the job, that's what will visibly shift things. But that takes courage. And my observation is there's a lot of leaders and a lot of HR people who feel really lonely in the space that they're in, and at a leadership level we don't have a culture where there's that vulnerability that's readily accepted. It's seen as, and I know from a HR perspective, I've had a lived experience of, well, isn't that what I'm paying you for? It's like, well, no, one person, 5,000 people work here. We've got to use all of our leaders and our bandwidth to be able to drive change. So it's about being able to bring all those levels and perspectives to the table.
And if you were to go out on site, or if you were to be able to have a conversation with every employee of every company that you've worked with, what questions you, would you be asking to each person, and what information would you be gathering when you're or what information do you gather when you're speaking to the people who are working for these companies?
A lot of the time for me, and it's not necessarily in this order, but it is around, why do you love kind of working here? What drew you to be in this environment? But it's also, it is literally as simple as what can we do to make your life easier? And you wait to see what it takes. Because as soon as you go in trying to communicate information from your perspective, you're shifting the dynamic of people not sharing. That's my experience. So I think a lot of the time it's going in and it's not assuming people are not delivering. So a lot of the time I see conversations play out where it's like, we need to be levelling up production, we need to be improving where we're at, so we're coming out to see what you need. It's like, so straight away what you're telling us, we're not doing good enough, and then there must be a deficit and we need you to fill a deficit. It's like, no, we need to be engaging on a level of how can we make your life easier? Because a lot of the time people are turning up, as you say, wanting to do a good job, wanting to but they're doing it hard. There are things that frustrate them. It's like, how can we identify the things that frustrate them and get out of their way so that they can actually do the job that we've hired them to do?
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions that you would ask people out on, you know, like in the companies that you're going to?
So I think it depends on the space and how you bring people together and what the purpose of it is, because I think that a lot of it's intention, right? So I think that, you know, and with clients I'm working with right now, going into conversations with from a culture like that, we want to go from good to great. We want this to be the greatest place to work where we can have the most phenomenal impact in this space. What can we do better in that regard? People are pretty on point in terms of, I think it's more going, you do need to go in with the open question, because I feel like if you go in with your list of questions, you get a really narrow response.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's trying to find out how you can have that happen at all different levels. How do leaders build that into their toolbox meetings? How does that get more organically, you know, how do we capture feedback in different ways that are not happiness surveys?
Mm-hmm. So no happiness surveys. Good Lord. Steer clear of the happiness surveys. I repeat, steer clear of the happiness surveys.
They cost you a lot of money and you don't get a return.
No ROI. So wrapping up, I ask all my guests this question when it comes to, and it's a big question, so feel free to take some time. If you had all of the resources that you would want or need that you feel could make a change or an impact, how would you use them? And what would those resources be to change the companies that you're going into or the FIFO culture, for example, at the moment?
Oh, that's a great question. All the resources in the world. I think I look at it from more of a human aspect, to be honest. Like my mind goes straight away to I wish if there was the resources and the space, the capacity that people could have a similar experience to what I did. And that is that by completely shifting your environment and your perspective, you realise where the bullshit is. And moving to Cambodia and seeing things that I saw and then working across Southeast Asia and doing different work globally, but it's that context where you're challenged on everything that you knew to be true. You see people with nothing who are the happiest that people in the world, and you're like, from as a behavior specialist, you're like, God, how is this showing up? Like, how do we build this gratitude into our everyday so that we keep perspective on what's important? Because most of the time, and close your ears if you're listening, anyone that's an exec or a leader, but the job's not important. And I think that the irony would be if I had all the resources in the world, it would be able to take people away from their job for a moment for them to realise how insignificant it is.
Yeah.
How controversial is that from a HR leader in the community? But I think it's the perspective reset, right? I think we can just get so swallowed up in it that you get conditioned. You get conditioned to accept bad behaviour, whether that's in relationships, work, private or anything, because there's a conditioning, there's a habit that gets formed, and I think you have to have a significant shift. If I could do anything, I'd be driving all leaders and execs coming on our Cambodia retreats. It'd be like, you know, being able to take people away and take them on this culture learning journey and self journey so that they can check themselves at the door when they go back to their organisations and their teams. But that's not real life, right? You know, in terms of, but you know, you put an unlimited resource question to me. So I'm like, that would be my dream. It's trying to give people the space to be able to step into their awesomeness. And I feel like our jobs and our work environments often rob us of that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could all tune into that again around what it is that makes us like really inspired to do what we do and why we do it, which might be at home, not at work, the reasons for why we do what we do. For me, it's impact for community, but it's also building a legacy, you know. And I think that's because it's like I don't want people to have the toxic experiences that I did, and I want other organisations to be able to create environments where people will have the ability to be that awesomeness. And that's where if you want to combat toxic cultures, then you need inclusive work environments. And so it's trying to do whatever we can to build inclusivity so we don't have this tokenistic misunderstanding around what diversity, equity and inclusion is, and we actually look at it with a culture lens. And if we could drive upskilling people in that in every organisation at all levels, then I think we'd be in a much better place.
I love that. It's probably a great place to finish. But before we do, would you like to – how can people work with you, get in touch with you to learn a little bit more about yourself? And do you want to share with us a little bit about Reimagine?
Sure. So anyone that wants to hear more can find me, Trina Sunday, on LinkedIn or hit us up at reimaginehr.com.au. As I said, we work with organisations and exec teams on what they're looking to do to drive high performance and improve people practices in their organisations. But our passion projects are around the work we do with HR teams to help enable and empower HR teams to do great HR and therein be able to have an impact for lots of different people. So there's different, you know, we've got consultative coaching, we've got programs that help develop HR teams at all level. We've got digital events that we run that, you know, can be accessible because we're working, you know, across Southeast Asia and Australasia generally. So it just gives us a bit more reach outside of Perth as well to bring and inject some new thinking into the space.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being such an exceptional human, for the change that you're making in the world.
Oh, shut you down.
Stop it.
Stop it. Keep going.
This conversation was very refreshing. I love your honesty and your openness and your vulnerability, and I think that's obviously what helps make an impact when you're able to have those conversations if that's the culture that you're trying to instill. So I absolutely value being introduced to you and the work that you're doing. And, yeah, thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks, Becky. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Resource Podcast. If you have found anything in this episode helpful, educational, inspiring or thought-provoking, please could you guys do me a solid, take a screenshot, tag me, share on socials and leave a review so I can continue getting this into your ear holes and making the impact that we'd hope. If you've been triggered by anything in today's episode or you're experiencing harassment or abuse, please reach out to 1-800-RESPECT or Lifeline on 13 11 14. If you're in a regional area of WA, you can also get in touch with DV Assist on 1800 080 083.